The following presentation is part of the Beyond the Blast Doors Network.
This is Pete Pletzer, and welcome to Around the Galaxy, the Star Wars Fan Talk Show. This week, we're bringing you a special episode with guest co-host Andy Lemire and authors Michael Morisi and Mike Chen. Join us for an in-depth roundtable discussing the three most developed characters in the Star Wars universe. So strap yourselves in, relax, and enjoy this journey around the galaxy. Welcome to episode number 95 of Around the Galaxy, the Star Wars Fan Talk Show. I am your host, Pete Pletzer, and we are a part of the Beyond the Blast Doors Network. Thank you so much for joining us this week. If this is your first visit with Around the Galaxy, well, thank you so much for checking us out. We really do appreciate it. Make sure to like, subscribe, share, rate, review, all that stuff you're supposed to do, and follow us on Twitter at ATGcast. Not only will you find out what's happening with the show, but I'm always actively engaging with the Star Wars fan community, talking about opinions and all the great goings on in Star Wars. If you are a return visitor, thank you so much for coming back. You are a part of our Star Wars family, and I can't thank you enough for that. As I mentioned, we are a part of the Beyond the Blast Doors Network, which means that we share a special space on the internet with a whole bunch of really great content creators like the Bombad Cast. You can catch them every Saturday, Scotty and Jerry, just geeking out about Star Wars from their own personal crazy perspective. And I love everything about that show because you never know what you're going to get. On Wednesdays, you get me and you get David Amelotti and you get Arzu Amin, and we talk about all the latest happenings in Star Wars. Our Star Wars conversation is really topical, talking about whatever's happening in the Star Wars universe at this time. And on Mondays, you get Hala Chronicles, which is a live Star Wars toys and collectibles show hosted by Josh Most and Andy Lemire. Speaking of Andy Lemire, Andy Lemire is my guest co-host on this week's show. For those of you who've been with the show for a while, you know that on occasion, every couple months or so, we put together a show that we call Metachlorians. And Metachlorians is an opportunity for Andy and I to take a deep dive into a particular something about Star Wars. And this week, we are very fortunate to have been joined by Michael Morisi and Mike Chen. Both are Star Wars authors and are a part of the Del Rey From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back anthology. It's a great series, a great book. And Mike Chen brings us a really cool story called Disturbance, which is about the moments leading up to Vader and Palpatine's discussion about Luke Skywalker. And Michael Morisi brings us a phenomenal story about a point of view from a soldier in the trenches during the Battle of Hoth. Great guys. But if you listen to them, they were both on my show a few months ago. And if you listen to their interviews, you know that they are both prequel nerds. They love prequels. They come from that prequel perspective. And so we wanted to have a conversation with them about what we felt were the three most and best developed characters in the Star Wars universe. And so without further ado, let me bring you this interview, which we recorded back at the end of November. I think it was even before the episode with Ahsoka on The Mandalorian. It was around the Thanksgiving time frame. But let me bring you this wonderful interview with our good friends Michael Morisi, Mike Chen, and Andy Lemire.
Andy, good to see you again, man. How are you? How are things?
I am well. Happy holidays, Pete.
Happy holidays to you as well. You know, it's so great to get back together to do another episode of Metachlorians. We've talked about a whole bunch of different topics, you and I, and usually we have a guest and or two. And you know, we've talked, what have we talked about? We've talked about the role of romance in Star Wars. We've talked about the treatment or mistreatment of children in the saga. We've talked about pros and cons of The Rise of Skywalker. And now we're going to dig into the prequels.
So what I've really enjoyed about these conversations are that, you know, a couple of things are that we get to go deeper in a specific topic that maybe we wouldn't have otherwise. And, you know, in the past, it's just been you and me, but today we get to do that with a couple friends, Star Wars friends, that I know you've interviewed recently, and I'm really looking forward to hearing their take, their perspective on this too.
Yeah, this will be a lot of fun. Let me bring in Mike Chen and Mike Morisi, who are two authors who've been recent guests on Around the Galaxy. And if you listen to those episodes, you'll know that both of them expressed a love of the prequels. And they are both writers in the brand new, From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back from Del Rey Books. Michael, Mike, welcome. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having us.
That's great to see you again. Michael, how are you?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Mike and I have known each other for a few years now. I don't know how it started, though, Mike.
I think one of us saw the other one tweeting about the prequels, and then we just became buddies from that. Like, seriously, that's what it was, the prequels and the fact that you wrote a Dishonored comic book. It was like those two things, and we just started chatting, and then that was it, man. We just started taking off.
Yeah, yes. The prequels bring us together. See? Yeah. We're off to a good start.
That's fantastic. And so, like I said, if you had listened to those episodes, you know that we had dug into the prequels and we decided we wanted to take kind of a unique perspective on it. Because what's interesting about the prequels, I think, and the great thing about this kind of an episode is there's no holds barred. So jump in, interrupt, jump on each other. Let's have some fun with it. But one of the interesting things about the prequels to me is that it is now old enough, it is now enough history so that for some people, it was their entry, it was their Star Wars films, right? The late 90s into the 2000s, that was their gateway. And for me, it was a revisit, it was a return to. And for somebody like my son or in that general age bracket, it just exists. It's just Star Wars. It's just part of the story. So Mike, you wrote Disturbance in From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back, which draws on that amazing relationship between Palpatine and Anakin / Vader. You know, we talked beforehand that we were going to address three characters that we believe came from, that are the richest characters that have been developed in Star Wars, and they originated in the prequel era. Not necessarily in the prequels themselves, but in the prequel era. But, Mike, maybe respond to the fact that Darth Vader, what makes Darth Vader so amazing now? Where would you start with him? Because in 77, he was just some cool-looking bad guy. By the time we got to the end of the original trilogy, we got a story about him, but it wasn't that deep. But now, he's not just a bad guy. He's a sympathetic character.
And he's a sympathetic character in that you can understand where he came from, but he still makes a lot of bad choices. Mm-hmm. And I think I love what you're seeing, like the mirror that George did with the prequels, where Luke faces a lot of the same choices that Anakin did. And then Anakin he's giving into temptation rather than resisting, particularly in, you know, Revenge of the Sith versus Return of the Jedi. When I was writing my story, the idea, like, I really wanted to write a Vader story, and I knew they wouldn't let me do that because they wanted to get the side characters in there. But I love the idea of Anakin, like from Clone Wars, how he's just pulled in so many directions, and he's sympathetic because no one's looking out for him. Everyone is trying to take advantage of him. You know, the Jedi want him to be the chosen one, but they don't want to give him any authority. You know, Palpatine wants to use him as a dark side person. You know, even Padme, like, because they can't have an honest relationship with each other, like, completely honest. Like, even as husband and wife, like, they have a difficult relationship, and they're just constantly separated. So he's always being pulled in these different ways. And I think that's just, from storytelling and character perspective, that's really rich material to mine for. I mean, this sounds cheesy, but like the human condition, because like we are all pulled in multiple directions, and it's really easy to empathize with that. So with my story, I wanted to show that, like, underneath all of that, underneath like the dark side, all of that is still a twisted version of Anakin who still wants what Anakin Skywalker wanted, not necessarily what Darth Vader wanted. It's just been really corrupted by the dark side.
Yeah, yeah. Mike M. I'll just point. But Mike, talk to me about your perception of Darth Vader as a character. I mean, it's always great to get, you know, a writer's perspective from the two of you, because you come in from a character perspective, and you've written in the prequel era. How do you see Anakin in that time, and what's most appealing, do you think, about him there?
Well, a lot of things, you know, and I think that, like, the greatest thing about Anakin is that he's almost a vessel for all the things that, you know, George Lucas was trying to do and did so well, that it's, like, I think, really underappreciated and undervalued. And I think that, like, it's funny, when the prequels first came out, I sort of, you know, had my problems with them too. I was like, I loved them. I didn't love them as much as I love them now, but it took me a while to gain an appreciation that I have now. And I think the reason being is not because they're different from from the original trilogy. It's because it's a really complicated story. Like, when you look at it, and it's not because the politics, like, the politics do make it a little complicated and everything, that, you know, the treaties and whatever and blockades, but really it's complicated because it gives us something that we won that we didn't really expect in its depiction of the Jedi and the Council. We expect, nobility and the ability to always do what's right and make right decisions and be these kind of paragons of all these Jedi values of, you know, faith and honesty and courage and etc. And you start to see that wither and decay. And one of the reasons is because of Anakin, you know, because of everything Mike said, that they failed him miserably at every opportunity, because they were, you know, Mace Windu was clearly jealous of him. Yoda was doubtful of him and maybe a little frightened of him, and they just never knew what to do with him. And you see it in that Anakin's development through being surrounded by, you know, jealousy and doubt and fear of everybody around him whom he's supposed to trust and look up to his leadership and almost like surrogate father figures. Anakin becomes he is such a fascinating, deep, and rich character that I think often gets overlooked. I think sometimes the story of Anakin in the movies gets a little bit hard to pull out. I think sometimes the movies make you work a little too hard for it, but once you get there and you start seeing what's happening, it's that tragic story of not just him turning to Vader, but what led him to turning to Vader is a remarkably smart and moving and salient story.
Yeah. I mean, there's one of the things that struck me not too long ago, and it took me a while to even notice it. It was actually years after the particular Clone Wars episode arc ran. But when you watch Revenge of the Sith now, and you see Anakin's frustration, when you saw it back in 2003, 2004, was it, whatever year it was, 2005. The thing that I took notice of is when you watch Revenge of the Sith, and everybody's like, "Oh, Anakin's just a whiner. He's just, you know, he's being people who don't know the full backstory, right?" Or people who, or even myself, who just watched it as from a different perspective before the Clone Wars
from
came
a certain
out.
Point of view,
from a certain point of view, if you will, Mike. That's but now that you know that not only did you see all that stuff on screen, but you also had what happened in the Clone Wars, the way they treated his apprentice, the way everything that happened, and now you watch Revenge of the Sith and you get it. Like, you understand why he feels so beat up and why he feels like he can turn or should turn against this Jedi Council.
Can I interject a little anecdote?
Please. Yes, absolutely.
So my wife, who has seen, like, she's seen the same amount of Clone Wars as my daughter, so about like 15 episodes, because we're watching it as a family. So she's seen like early Ahsoka and Anakin, and she says, like, okay, they do a much better job at like establishing the relationships in Clone Wars. Like, it seems more adult friendly. But when we watched the last episode of The Mandalorian with Bo-Katan and talking about Ahsoka, I had this idea where I said, like, I know you don't know who these characters are, and you barely know Ahsoka. Let's watch The Siege of Mandalore. And I know this is going to be a little bit spoilery, but not really, because you know Clone Wars ends with Order 66. Like, there's only one way that it can
right.
go. Yep. And so she watched it and she said, like, wow, that's really amazing. It's like some of the best Star Wars available. I'm like, that's right, it is. But also from a character perspective, like, you know, she loves Ahsoka now, because it's basically a 2-hour Ahsoka movie, but also the moment with Anakin and Ahsoka, you know, at the very beginning of that, and also how Ahsoka tries to connect with Anakin through Obi-Wan and through Yoda, and they just fail him completely. And she said, like, even those little moments, like, she feels like she understands, like, the separation and manipulation that Anakin was feeling on all sides in just those little snippets from Clone Wars, that, like, you know, even just that made Revenge of the Sith more grounded for her.
Well, all of you guys are just, like, right on it. Well, I mean, in my opinion, and, you know, if we just had those movies, I think the movies kind of portray Anakin in all of the negative ways you kind of need him to be in order to understand that he becomes Darth Vader. But what the animated series, like Clone Wars, only Clone Wars, I guess, but what they really did was, like, you know, in the movies, Anakin was a kid who's dealing with not having his mom. He's teen angsty. He's awkward romantic. You know, he's got kind of a braggadocious skill set, you know, that he's not afraid to tell you that he has, mm-hmm. and sometimes fails at showing you that he has. But in the animated series, they make him out to be much more of a leader. You get to see him transition from Padawan to, you know, Jedi Knight, who then has his own Padawan and responsibilities. You know, he still has flashes of anger, but he's a little more under control. You know, he listens a little bit more, but then he also doesn't still. So that's kind of, I mean, you have all of these things that the animated series kind of complements what the movies made him out to be. So now that when you see, or when Order 66 happens, or whether it's in Clone Wars or it's on the screen, you have this wealth of, this is who this person is. And you've seen all these different ways, like you guys were saying, how he was pulled in different directions. And now you feel for him, and you see that for all of his desire to be the greatest Jedi or even the most powerful Jedi, he's still weak. You know, he still made bad decisions. And that's like me. Like, I make bad decisions all the time. I'm not, you know, why would I expect Anakin to be any better? But yeah, you just have all of this more content with them that you just, it's really at the end of Order 66 in the Clone Wars. That's when it truly became heartbreaking. Like, it was emotional, you know, it was like, this sucks. Like, I don't want him to be Darth Vader, you know? And now he is. Now he's the original trilogy Darth Vader, who, by the way, doesn't say a whole lot in the original trilogy. And it makes sense because he's so bummed out that he's Darth Vader now, you know?
Right.
Like, he's not going to be Mr. Chatterbox when he's got the weight of all of his failures being manipulated by Palpatine for 20 years. You know, I mean, it all goes together so well now, and I love it.
Yeah. And not to just blow smoke, but Mike, that's why your story works so well, because it's still, you capture Palpatine still pulling on that stuff that got him to the Darth Vader that we met in Revenge of the Sith, and he's still hitting him with it. He's still using it against him. And I mean, that's an interesting concept, and that's probably what makes him so tragic. Is, I mean, imagine it's the worst kind of abusive relationship you could be in. Somebody constantly reminding you and pull, you know, using every weakness against you. It's a horrible existence.
Yeah, it's classic. Like, if you've read, like, you know, psychological textbooks on, like, abusive relationships and abusive behavior, like, Palpatine is like 1,000,000% that. And then the support system that you're supposed to lean on, your friends who are supposed to be honest with you and call stuff out and say, like, let's talk about this. That's supposed to be Obi-Wan. And my daughter, who's only 6, some of the questions that she asks, like, you know, she'll ask silly Star Wars questions, but she'll also ask, like, why didn't Obi-Wan talk to Anakin? And I'm like, that's kind of the problem.
Yeah. And you know, you were talking about how the people surround him. The point that I wanted to ask you about, Mike, because you, Michael, you you made a passing comment that I never thought of before. And I'd love to find out where it comes from for you. When you said that Mace Windu was jealous of Anakin, I never saw it that way. Where does that come from? Where does that insight come from?
Oh, I don't know. I guess maybe he's not. I always looked at it though. Like, I think that he had a certain, you know, Mace was kind of like the bravado of the Jedi Council. He was the purple lightsaber guy. He was he was still the general in the field a lot, and I feel like he had a certain swagger to him that the other council members didn't. And I think that, like, you can read the text in a certain way that he's sort of threatened by Anakin, because Anakin, it kind of makes him redundant, you know, like, what do we need Windu for anymore? You know, we have this guy who's superior. He does exactly what Windu kind of does, and he does it like so much better, and he's the chosen one. And I think in my mind, Windu picked up on that, and he that's why he treated Anakin with such disdain at every opportunity. He never really gave Anakin any respect. He never gave him any appreciation. He never really gave him any value. And I think it's because, at least to me, the way I read the text is he wasn't trustworthy of the prophecy. He seemed, you know, wary of that a little bit, but I think it was just, he was just jealous, you know, because it was Anakin's kind of an existential threat to who he is on the council.
That's great. I want them to give you the Mace Windu story and from a certain point of view, Phantom Menace, because I want to dig more into that. I had never thought of it that way, but now that you say it, it makes total sense. I mean, you look at the way Mace even speaks to him in the films and in the Clone Wars, is just in a way dismissive in many ways, which is that's almost as bad as being, you know, aggressive with someone.
And his Padawan.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I see what Michael's talking about. And I never took it as much of like a jealousy, but more of like existential threat. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Mace sees Anakin representing all these things that the Jedi shouldn't be. He's too old to train. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, he's loaded with prophecy instead of just like, you know, hey, we are all one type of, you know, Zen. And, you know, he can't control his feelings. And, you know, he wants to basically be like a rock star of a Jedi.
Yeah.
You know, and he's cocky and he's all these things. And so, like, I did get the sense of, like, you know, the slight, like, not necessarily jealousy, but, like, he doesn't trust him. He doesn't trust his power. And he feels like, you know, this is not, no Mandalorian pun intended, but this is not the way.
Yeah,
you know, and I think there's like a threat of that, of like, you know, we don't do things this way. It's like when you go to like at a corporate job and you run into like a boss and like, you know, you want to be like, hey, I know how to do things more efficiently, and the boss is like, no, we don't do that here. Like, that's Mace Windu right there. And like, right, you know, those people are like pissed off that, like, you know, the next generation is here that might be able to use technology better or whatever.
That's a really great, and now when Mace Windu says no, when he asks if he's going to be trained, it's going to ring a little differently for me. That's really great. I love that perspective. You know, we also talked a lot about the about that support system, and we can't talk about Anakin without talking about Ahsoka. And you think about that just for 1 second. We had what, 25 years plus or minus of Anakin / Darth Vader without Ahsoka, and she went literally, I mean, I'm always transparent about this. When I first saw the Clone Wars cartoon movie, I was turned off by it. The whole Snips and Sky Guy thing. I was like, oh my gosh, this is not working for me. And Ahsoka was close to Jar Jar level for me when I first saw her. And now she is without a doubt one of my favorite Star Wars characters, and so much so that I'm worried about seeing her come to life in The Mandalorian. And I mean, I'm not losing sleep about it. It's not quite that bad, but it's so interesting because what I think about her character is that she's very similar to Anakin, except she, when faced with choice, went a different direction. And also, is this balance to him as a character?
So when we're doing our machete order, like an introduction to Clone Wars with my daughter, like I told my wife, I'm like, the Clone Wars movie, we're only going to watch like the first 25 minutes of it so you can see Anakin meet Ahsoka, and then we're just going to skip it because it's not worth watching.
Okay. It's rough. Thank God she grows into something that we, you know, this character we all love, so we can look at it and laugh. And it's fine. She ends up okay.
We all have our awkward stage, yeah.
right, yeah, exactly. But you know what? This goes to what kind of Andy was saying, I think, that he struck on, that I think is really an important thing about Ahsoka and the prequels. There's a reason why those, and I loathe to call them ancillary stories, because I think they're every bit as good as the movies, if not better, but they are kind of ancillaries, because what we know is the movies. The movies are the heart of the Star Wars experience, is those 9 or 11 films. Although you can argue two of those are ancillary films too, but anyway, we're talking about the episode. So anyway, the great thing about the Clone Wars era movies, or I'm sorry, the ancillary stuff, is that they're so rich, and Ahsoka is such a like a beacon of that richness. Because like, if you took the struggle that I have with like the original trilogy ancillary stuff, like mainly we're talking like the books, and the books would be about like Luke or Leia or even like Han or something like that. There's, if you're looking, like, let's look at Luke especially. There's nowhere really for him to go. You know, he's not, because we know where he's going to end up, but just because like there's no real depth and complexity to him just doing the right thing and continuing to do the right thing. And maybe he's tempted, but he doesn't go. And there's really not a whole lot of stuff there. When you go back to the prequels, you have all these same things of temptations and people giving in, you know, and we see the darkness kind of in all these corners, and especially in the Clone Wars, where it's hidden and you have this, you know, Phantom Menace that's around. And like, you have Ahsoka, and what we know about Ahsoka is that you have this time of war, you have this time of great moral complexity, where we know one character went dark in Vader, and all we know of when we first knew Ahsoka, minus when she resurfaced in Rebels, is that she didn't make it in some, or at least we didn't think. She wasn't in the movies, she wasn't in any books, she wasn't in any comics, so we're like, well, something happens to her. Right. Maybe she went to the dark side, maybe whatever. And that gave her the potential to grow, because she could be a character that always kept us on our toes, not just because we didn't know her outcome, but we didn't know how her outcome took shape. And we see that in her. Like, she's a really complex character who is, because she's so kind of like, for lack of a better term, like spunky, and she has a mind of her own. Like, she's not like Obi-Wan, who's a, you know, very much like a rule follower, or, you know, other, you know, Jedi we see in that time who are kind of just, you know, they're with the system. But yeah. Ahsoka's like, has the same thing DNA as Anakin, where he's kind of marching to the beat of his own drum. And that makes us kind of, makes it more things that you can do with her as a character, but also makes her more of a character that you don't, she's a wild card like Anakin, and we know what Anakin turned out to be, and now it's like, well, what'll happen with Ahsoka? We know now, you know, to a degree. We don't know how her story ends exactly. I guess we're kind of pick that thread up in The Mandalorian, but like, that was a really, really exciting time to tell a character's arc, and like, they did so much with it in giving her. She was always unexpected, and she was always doing stuff that I just never thought a Jedi would do. Similar, mirroring Anakin, and they had such a great relationship because of that unexpectedness, and because they were able to see beyond the dogmatic rules of the Council. And it was just, she's one of the best characters in all of Star Wars lore.
What I really love about that too, Michael, is that it happened in real time, right? Her development happened as the Clone Wars happened. We weren't going back to fill in some gaps like we did for Anakin. And, you know, later when we get to Maul, we're not going ahead to tell us more about the character. Ahsoka happened in real time, and she was not an on-screen, you know, movie screen presence. Mm-hmm. And what I really dig about all that was that, you know, on the Star Wars timeline, Ahsoka existed in this very short window, you know, the Clone Wars. And we know that at some point she's gone, like you said, by Order 66, you know, she doesn't show up anymore. But she was able to push back on Anakin in a much more effective way than Obi-Wan ever did. And because that relationship with Obi-Wan and Anakin was heading towards its eventual disaster, I think a lot sooner if Ahsoka doesn't come along, because their personalities were so different. Because Ahsoka was a lot more like Anakin when she pushes back and he is in a leadership role over her. Now he has to think a little responsibly about, now I'm responsible for this person and I have to kind of take care of her. And we never get that in movies. Like, we never got any aspect of Anakin as a leader or like a general or a master over a Padawan. And so Ahsoka's character development goes in real time, and where I think generally all of us were kind of annoyed with her at first because she was young and immature, but by the end she's older and mature and very capable of handling herself. And maybe the most empowering thing anybody can do is have the ability to say no. And that's exactly what she did when she got to a certain point. She said no, and that took a lot of guts to do that in places where other characters in these stories did not, and they just kept going with it and got further lost. She said no and gained from it, even though it was painful to do. So that's the sign of like a great like integrity. I mean, all these characters, character descriptions that she has, it's because she was so well written. And, you know, tip of the cap to Mr. Filoni for the lion's share of that. But
he's pretty good.
I love it.
he's not bad.
It's interesting too, because you have somebody like Ahsoka who did push back, and that's what, you know, I think it was interesting to watch the fan base reaction to season 7 of Clone Wars, and the reaction to what I think is actually such important stories that people give such a hard time to, but the whole Martez sisters arc was really, really important, because this was the first time Ahsoka was on her own, and she was pulled away from what she was comfortable with, and she was thrown into a situation where she could have gone good or bad. She could have gone, you know, criminal underworld, or she could have, you know, she could have gone any of these directions. And the moral choices she had to make with the Martez sisters and interact with them and take, in a way, the younger sister under her wing, in a way, was so important to her growth. And I don't think I think people who look at those as quote unquote filler or just didn't like those episodes may have missed the point of what that story was trying to tell.
I think people, because, you know, I watched that unfold in real time, just like you guys did. And I was fine with it because I thought, like, this is important storytelling, because they already said it's going to end with the Siege of Mandalore. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, well, I want to find out how Ahsoka gets there. I think people were just frustrated because they wanted her as we knew her back. So I think it was more of like an impatience type of thing.
Yeah.
Like, and it has less to do with the storytelling. And I think, like, when people go back and watch season 7 now, like, those types, the purpose of those episodes will probably be a lot more evident, because you know that what you wanted out of that you got with the Siege of Mandalore. So now you can go back and appreciate it. It's kind of like with with anything that you're anticipating and it veers a little differently, like the prequels, it's like it's not necessarily what you wanted, so you feel impatient and a little anxious about it, and you want to make sure it's going to end okay. So I think, like, it'll be accepted a little bit better like a year from now.
I think that's a symptom of a well-written character too, the anticipation for more, right? You don't get that if you don't care about them. I completely agree with you, Mike, that maybe there was a perceived lull there with the Martez sisters, only because you want her, you know, you expect her to be all these things because she has shown that. And because we're invested in her now, we want to see her at her best and not having to struggle and deal with these things and get to the, we know there's a peak coming, and we want her to all get there because we're invested in her.
Well, and I think it's also because Filoni is actually a very good and methodical writer. And you have to remember, in a series, it's more like a novel than a script for a motion picture. You have those development pieces, and you know, people who, even if the Mandalorian recently with the Frog Lady episode was just filler. No, there were lessons going on in that particular episode that were so important. And that's the influence of writing a smart story. And that's having foresight and putting it all together. And again, without that, the impact at the end of the Clone Wars, the end of the Siege of Mandalore, is not the same.
Honestly, I hate that, like, filler. I just hate that term. It's like, well, it's just filler. It's like, it's all filler. If you want the story, here's the story. Okay, the Mandalorian gets a baby that you call a child, looks like Yoda, delivers to the Jedi, the end. Then there's no filler, okay? No.
I love that. Yeah, here's your beat sheet for the season, the end.
Yeah. Yada, 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 the end.
stuff happens, da, 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 the end. Like,
filler. And what's funny about that is, if you look at the prequel trilogy, it is that beat outline. And like George even talked about how, like, well, you know, I wanted to hit the highlights, and so you're missing like this giant gap where the Clone Wars actually happened. And then everyone complained about, like, hey, you know, what actually happens during the Clone Wars?
Right.
And so it's like, you're gonna, which one do you want? You know?
yeah, and this is why I think it's so amazing that here we are 40 years after that first movie came out, 43 years, and we're still talking about the story because all these pieces have been filled in around it. And you wrote on our website a really interesting piece. If you want to give sort of a high-level thing, I'd love to get the reaction from Mike and Michael about the role that Ahsoka played to Anakin that we learned in the last episode of Clone Wars.
Well, it was such a mood change those last two episodes. You know, the music was different, the tone was different, it was ominous, you know, it was all the things leading up to Order 66 that you knew were going to happen, but you didn't know exactly how this was going to unfold for everybody else. That very last scene when Vader appears at when Anakin appears as Vader in the Clone Wars, in the snowy wreckage of that ship, and all of the sticks in the air where the clones were buried by Rex and Ahsoka, he finds the lightsaber, and you know, no words are happening right now. It's just all feeling, right? So he finds the lightsaber, blows the kind of dusts it off, ignites it, and we see him hold a blue saber again, you know, which was poignant because he went from blue to red, and now he's holding a blue saber again as Vader. And he looks up and he sees, what's that owl bird, which is a representation of Ahsoka. He sees it just in the distance, and he can't reach her. He is pretty sure that, but not certain that she's died. And that symbolized the last real connection he had with his old life, until later on when he realizes he has a son and then later a daughter. But that was his last connection. And that, at that moment when he sees, you know, what represents Ahsoka, and he can't get to her, and he's holding the only thing he has left of what represented his past, that's the moment Anakin fully becomes Vader, when he's lost all hope of any meaningful connection to his past.
That's a really elegant way to look at it. I actually did not put that together, but like, now I'm picturing it all. And I just watched this last weekend. I'm like, oh, wow, that really like just syncs up. And it reminds me of, you know, I talk about this book all the time, the Matthew Stover Revenge of the Sith novel, and the last few passages where you're in Anakin's head, and he talks about, like, I don't remember the exact quote, but it basically talks about, like, what, like, the dark side actually is, and it's just about basically, like, isolating you from everyone that you care about and pushing you further and further away. And then it ends with, this is how it feels to be Anakin Skywalker forever. And it's just, like, you know, all of these facets that Filoni wove in there on a much more subtle level, partially because he had more tapestry to play with, and partially because he's a much better writer than George Lucas. It's okay to say that. It's true.
Yeah, no, George is a good storyteller. Just, you could be a great storyteller and not be a great writer. There's
I would love to, like, if we could get, like, the Hadron Accelerator to open up a portal to another world where George gave a screenwriter, like, the, you know, his story beats. God, those movies would be so good. but yeah, I agree with what you're saying about how, like, Anakin is just, everything is taken away from him systematically. And then for, like, you see how, like, I'm assuming in, like, the retcon backstory, like, Obi-Wan actually passes, you know, like, through communications and stuff, like, you know, passes on to Anakin that, like, you know, that, you know, we, there, or the council or Obi-Wan would say, like, you know, yeah, Ahsoka wanted to say hi, you know, like, or, you know, that little bit of outreach, and then just to have it squashed, which is just, it's heartbreaking. And like, I was watching, like, my wife, who hadn't seen it before, as she's watching Siege of Mandalore, and then she turns to me at the end, she's like, Ahsoka has seen a lot, hasn't she? I'm like, she has.
the last character that I think has gained life for a very different reason, but is
literally
and physically, right, is Maul. And I've always said that Maul is the potentially the most wasted villain in cinematic history. Like, he was literally the poster for Phantom Menace. He had two lines in the film, it gets cut in half and disappears, but then becomes, again, much like Ahsoka, a character that I love that character, but for all very different reasons. And I think one of the things, I think what connects these three characters is the fact that, you know, we now see a more conflicted Anakin than we did on screen. So we understand how he got there. We're sympathetic to how he got there. We see somebody like Ahsoka who, you know, deep down was always driven by the right thing. She walked away from the Jedi because of a very difficult personal decision about doing the right thing and being good and true to yourself. And then you have Maul, who's literally driven, every decision he's made is based on revenge. I mean, he is revenge of the Sith. He is everything about that. And to see his character expanded in both Rebels and Clone Wars, to get that background on him, to understand and see, it's not as directly related to the overarching story of Star Wars, but it's a very interesting character study in what pure darkness can look like.
It's funny because when I was talking about how my wife watching Siege of Mandalore, so she has not seen any post-Phantom Menace Maul yet. Like, she knows he exists.
Yep.
And like, she knows Sam Witwer voices him. She knows that he even shows up in Rebels. So, like, she's seen, like, the promo artwork and stuff like that, but she's actually never seen the character in action. And she was telling me afterwards that she really wants to just watch all the Maul stuff now. She's like, he's fascinating. I'm like, he is. He's so complex. And he's complex even though he's morally wrong. You know, it's like, you know he's going to do terrible things. And you know that that's all he cares about. But his motivations for revenge and how he manipulates things, it's fascinating, even though, you know, it's like watching a horror movie where you're enchanted by the villain.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like that, because it's like, you never want to be on his side, but you can't take your eyes off of him. And I think a big part of that, like, there's the writing, but also Sam Witwer's performance of Maul is just awesome.
Yeah. And I think, based on what, you know, to play off of what you were just saying, I think what I attach to with Maul is, it's like, you, when we're at that point as human beings and you have to make that decision between right and wrong, you know that you shouldn't do wrong, and hopefully most of the time you do right. But watching him is, it's almost empowering, because you just watch him go further down that path, and you just want, it's like, let's see what happens if you make that decision. And what's great is, by the time, spoiler alert, he meets Obi-Wan in the desert, he's been drained by just, it's sort of a visualization of, if you continue to just be driven by revenge and anger, it's exhausting. And he was almost happy to die at the end. again.
Yeah, he was done. He was done at that point. He knew it, you know. But the greatest villains are always the ones, in my mind, the greatest villains are the ones who we understand why they're doing what they're doing. We don't have to agree with why they're doing what they're doing. Nobody wants like the mustache twirling like archetypal villain that just is evil. Sometimes it is. You know, like sometimes it is interesting to have a character is just evil, like Iago. Othello is a great. I'm just evil. Just don't like this guy. I don't really have any reason. I don't know. I just hate him. You know,
and there's something kind of bad guy. We don't like him. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. We I'm sure we've all had that. There's just people like, I just don't like that guy.
You know, that was the problem with Maul in The Phantom Menace was we were just told this guy, you saw him on the poster, bad guy. You're like, oh, yeah. Okay.
He says, we're going to have our revenge. And you're like, I don't understand what that means. You know, but over time we come to see like, you can look at Maul and you're like, yeah, man, I get it. I wouldn't do it. But I get it. And like that is the most powerful for any character. But I think especially for a villain, you want to understand you are doing things that are exist outside the norms of culture, society, law, whatever you want to, you know, affix to it. And you are an aberration. You're in the minority of people who behave this way. So you are something has to be driving you to step outside that. And when you get those reasons and you concretize those reasons and you say, wow, you can look at those characters and say, I absolutely understand why you've gone down this path. I get it. It's a really powerful thing. Maul becomes that thing. And as dark as he gets and continuously just driven by darkness and revenge, you never lose sight of why he's like that, like really ever.
Yeah. No, there's no mistaking who Maul is anytime throughout. I mean, his allegiances change, but they change for a singular purpose. He does everything for a singular purpose. And for a moment, he has a connection with Savage, right? They now have a commonality and even a familial relationship. But I see Maul as everything Ahsoka is, but the opposite reasoning. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you could even, and something else I wrote about once, but with the dual blades, the painted face, the apprentice being disenfranchised by their order, walking away, and then coming back to be true to themselves, you know. And for Maul, that just means he's raging against Jedi and Sith. Mm-hmm. And for Ahsoka, she comes back to aid with the Jedi, whether she is or isn't one we can discuss. But they both stay true to themselves the whole time, have bad things happen to them, respond in their way that they only know how. And for that, for Maul, it's always singular focused. How can I get back at those that wronged me? And for Ahsoka, it's, How can I make better the wrong situation that happened to me so it doesn't happen to somebody else? And so I see them as just being the same character, but with all of the opposite motivations in what they're doing and why they're doing
it. You just totally blew my mind on that, because even I didn't even think about the face paint, but if you look at them side by side, it's almost a similar pattern on their face, not exactly the same, and that's a bit of a stretch, but the fact that there is that pattern, the two lightsabers, you're right, they are kind of a
they're both awesome each other.
That's good stuff.
I think about with Maul's last line in Rebels where he said, you know, he asked like, is he the chosen one, and he says he will avenge us. And it tells you everything that you need to know about Maul and like how he's driven, even in his last breath. That's all he cares about. And I think what makes him really fascinating as a character is like, you know, we all suffer through bad stuff and we all get angry. And like, you know, it's like we joke about like, I'm going to like rage donate for the election or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, like we're all motivated by that in some way. But Maul does not regret it, and he turns it up to 11. And he's this fascinating character study of how you can take someone who's like that and just does not regret it at all. You know, and he's like, this is all I care about. And so, like, when we, as people in, like, within societal norms, we often internalize all of that. You know, it's like, I feel bad about this one thing. I'm going to get mad at myself. And, like, you know, maybe I'll go work out and, you know, trying to feel better that way. You know, right. But Maul's like, no, I'm just going to explode over everyone. He does all these things that, like, we are not allowed to do. And it's like what Michael was saying earlier about, like, he lives outside of these norms. And then you see him take it all the way to this very end. And if he had killed Kenobi, it's like, he still wouldn't be happy. And that's right. The fascinating thing about him is, like, he makes the same mistake about how he loses his fight with Kenobi. And then even in the end, all he cares about is, like, will he avenge us? Because I'm pissed off. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I thought was just super cool about Darth Maul was that. So we both, like, you know, all four of us like Ahsoka because of her kind of her wisdom beyond her years kind of approach to that she's able to navigate through and still come out at least with her integrity and you know, on the right side of history, you might say. But Maul, just think about this insight that Maul has. Maul knows that Anakin is the chosen one to the Jedi. And he knows that he is also Palpatine's ultimate plan. And that everyone in front of him is just a stepping stone to get to Anakin. So Maul tries to steal Anakin away from him. And even later on with Ezra, in order to burn all of it down, right?
Right.
So he knows who Anakin is at one point to the Jedi and to the Sith. And is hoping for his opportunity to take him away. And that's why he's disappointed at the end of Clone Wars, is why did they send you? You know, he says that to Ahsoka. He wasn't she wasn't the one that he wanted. He wanted to foil both of them by taking Anakin away, the queen on the chessboard. He wanted to take that one off the board for both of them so he could burn them both down. I love that. Like, I get it. And I love it. And I wish kind of he would have gotten to be able to do it because everything needed to control, alt, delete, and reset. I just love that he is so like, no, we're burning this shit down now. You know, I just love that. I love that.
The roof is on fire.
Exactly. And I lit it.
But he's right, though. I mean, the thing is that he's right. He's the anarchy in the system to a system that's kind of broken, because, like, he's right. It's just all game. You know, like, first it was, you know, Anakin, and then it's Luke, and then it becomes Rey, and just, like, you know, maybe it becomes somebody else after that. I don't know. He knows it's all game. He knows it's all pointless. So why not burn it down? Whatever. Let's just throw a grenade in there and see what happens, you know? And, like, that's his kind of, he's the grenade. He's the grenade. Just, like, I'm just going to burn it down, blow it up, and why not?
I never thought about it until just this moment, but he's the Joker of Star Wars, right? I mean, it's that same kind of... That complete disregard for what's acceptable in an effort to just see what can happen. The difference is, Joker is always portrayed as just literally doing it just to see what happens next. Whereas Maul was doing it, as you two just pointed out, because his plan was just I need to end this. I need to end this cycle. Yeah, it's just never. It's you know, he's in a way almost the Khaleesi of it, right? I'm gonna have to break the wheel, sort of thing.
I'll give myself a second. I want to say something really briefly. Why another reason why I should appreciate the prequels? It's speaking of the bigger picture of culture and entertainment, the prequels like represent the last time that we may ever see an artist's vision executed on the screen in a tentpole film. Like now with Marvel, with DC, with Star Wars, even there's templates and there's expectations and there's, you know, a million chefs in the kitchen, and that's the way these movies get made. And I get it; they're high risk, they cost a lot, they need to align. All those kind of things are true, but the prequels were straight up George Lucas's vision. That was those were the movies that man wanted to make. He made them. They cost millions and millions of dollars to do, and he got to put them on the screen, and we may never see that again. And for that alone, I will always, always, always love the prequels, because they're risky films. George could have just kind of like, I'll just make the original movies again. I'll just make, you know, give this kind of arc to Anakin, etc. But he went for something totally different that looked different, played different, and that's why they're more challenging. And bless that those movies for just existing. They are the last that we'll see of that, at least for a very long time. And you can find, if you still have any interest in listening to me talk, Michael Morisi on Twitter and Instagram and all that.
It's funny because, like, Michael and I, like, we text about Star Wars all the time. And, like, he's given me, like, that exact speech before. And I, like, the whole time I'm nodding yes. I am at Mike Chen Writer, and I tweet about Star Wars and Star Trek and Doctor Who a lot. But, I'll, you know, come in and visit me for all of your, like, geek tentpole franchise takes. And gifts.
And great books and great novels. Mike's a fantastic writer. His books are amazing. Everyone should read them. They're just wonderful.
And Michael writes badass space opera books too. And I even wrote fan fiction for one of them.
Oh, that's right. It all boiled down to us writing Star Wars fan fiction in the end. That's amazing.
Guys, this was so much fun. I really appreciate it, and like you both said, we could do this for days, and that's what's so great about this whole community as well, is this this desire to want to talk about it. And I love being able to have a conversation with folks who aren't taking a position and, you know, going to die on the sword for something other than the fact that we just love it. So this has been so much fun.
This is just part one of 10, right?
Yes, this is a continuing story of prequel analysis. But hey, if you want to do another one, I will absolutely do it. We'll pick another part of the prequels to talk about. This is great.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do it.
It was nice to meet you guys. This was a lot of fun tonight.
Yeah, likewise. This is fun. Thank you, guys.